Welcome to the Homeschool Together podcast. Where one working mom and a stay-at-home dad help you navigate the nuts and bolts of the growing and dynamic world of homeschooling.
With a focus on early learners, like me.
All the ins and outs of building and maintaining your homeschool life.
Homeschool!
Find out tips and tricks to make things like this easier.
I'm reading.
And ultimately, enjoy educating your kids. And what's that last thing?
Have fun together. Did I do good, Daddy?
Yeah, you did, sweetie. Good job. Hello and welcome back to Homeschool Together. Thank you for joining us. There are ways to support the podcast down in the show notes, but the best way to do that is to share an episode, and the best way to do that is to take today's episode and share that out there. Today we have a first-year homeschooler, Gina Nuccio, on the podcast today, where she's talking about, you know, all the challenges that she has, and these are the great episodes that we love to share with people, because this is just the perfect case of, you know, what the first year experience was.
Right.
She had kindergartner, her daughter, and she, luckily, she's not doing the homeschooling. She's doing the homeschooling planning. She has this wonderful husband that she drafted, you know, out of the minor leagues and brought into the big leagues of homeschooling. To stay at home dad,
the unsung heroes, stay at home fathers. Yeah, it was really great. It really paralleled our story too, about, you know, having a mom who is, you know, the one working and then and doing the planning and kind of the homeschool facilitator we joked about, and having dad be the one who's executing that plan and running homeschool.
It was so funny because it was literally our story, but with one more kid and maybe 2 years behind.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. These first year homeschoolers interviews are so powerful because it's that, you know, before you go into it, everyone is really worried that first year is going to be really rocky. And it's funny, we've done a number of these first year homeschooler interviews, and in general, they aren't really rocky. I mean, there is obviously some adjustment period, and there are some expectations that have to change and things, and there's obviously some preconceived notions that, you know, get thrown out the window when you actually dive in and you can label yourself a homeschooler. But in general, I think these first year interviews are usually very positive with, wow, we just didn't realize we could do this. And I think, you know, Gina really speaks to this, and just that what a joy it became, and all that they found within homeschooling. I think it takes some of that fear away from taking the plunge, because it's a big decision to make for ourselves, for not just our kids, but for our whole family, because it really affects your whole family life. And so these interviews are just wonderful. Gina was so well-spoken and just had such great information to share. So we hope that you all really love this episode. She's also a rural homeschooler, and she's homeschooling in a mostly religious area. So I think this is great for those of you who are concerned about, you know, how am I going to be a secular homeschooler in an area that maybe has a lot of homeschool but doesn't have much secular homeschool support. Yeah. This is a prime interview for how it's working for this family at this time. And I think it's great to not hear just from, you know, those who've done it for, you know, years or who have more experience, but to, you know, hear, you know, from someone who's fresh, who's just been through boot camp. And
successfully.
Successfully, and is still finding joy in it. You know, it's funny, she said, like, you know, not every day is perfectly joyful. And that's totally true. And I think those Pinterest or YouTube channels that will show the perfect lighting and that everyone's playing beautifully with Montessori toys and no one's hitting anyone else is not super accurate. But sometimes it is like that. And I think that the moments of joy for us, definitely, and I think Gina kind of speaks to this too, those moments of joy really outweigh the other factors. So this was a fantastic interview. We are so, so thankful that Gina had time to come and join us. So we hope that you all love this interview as much as we did. Hi, Gina. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm so excited about our conversation today.
Oh, we love our first year homeschooler interviews, because I think that first year is like the scariest one when people, you know, are going to decide to take that plunge. And we so often hear from talking heads like us and other people that have been homeschooling for like 5 years or 10 years or whatever. And sometimes it's really nice to catch folks right in that first year and hear all about it. So we so appreciate you coming on the show. So let's get us all up to speed. Can you tell us about your family and, a little bit about why you started homeschooling?
As you said, my name's Gina. I am a genetic counselor by training, and I saw patients up until a few years ago, and now I work remotely for a very small tech healthcare company, writing medical policy for them. But I live with my husband, who's a stay-at-home dad, and we have three kids. Our eldest is our daughter, who is almost six, and she is the one who is wrapping up her first year of homeschool, and therefore our first year of homeschool too. We're just wrapping up her kindergarten year. And then we have two sons who are 4 and 14 months. So they are in the mix as well. And
Woo,
we
stay at home
live
dad.
in,
No,
yes, I know. Yes.
We
So
love it.
we Yes, I sort of a sidebar. When I was researching homeschool and looking at curriculums, of course, that's how I came across y'all's YouTube page. And I think in the first video I watched, it was you talked about the fact that Matt is a stay-at-home dad, and then my jaw just dropped open. I was like, oh my gosh, they're doing literally what we want to do. I need to watch all of their videos, which is how I sort of got connected to
But you
y'all's
have three
channel.
children. It's one more child to worry about.
Right.
He's more
That
advanced and he
your
doesn't know
husband's
it.
outnumbered.
He's outnumbered now. Totally
He is
outnumbered.
outnumbered. Yes, thankfully the youngest one, he's just about to walk, so he's still not 100% mobile yet, but I think that is going to actually be the tipping point. So
Just
anyway,
keep
but
knocking him
we
over.
yeah, exactly. Distracting him with toys and snacks and stuff.
Don't get up. I'll get up. I'll
Right.
get up.
Right, exactly. But anyway, so the five of us live in a very small rural town in West Tennessee, and I'm originally from the Memphis area, so Memphis is the closest big city to where we live.
Awesome.
Great. And so you've got this great situation where you're able to work remotely, which is so lovely. I work remotely part-time and I love it. And then you've got a supportive husband who is helping with the kids. And then so what drove you guys to homeschool? Like, what was that thing that made that clinch decision for you?
So I never ever envisioned us being a family that homeschooled at all. I had a lot of misconceptions about what homeschooling was, which I'm sure we'll get into later in our discussion. But really, it was the pandemic, which I think was the tipping point, or at least the start of the conversation for a lot of folks. My daughter, who was not yet even 2 at the time, when the pandemic started, she was obviously, we were way, not even thinking about school at that age. And it was actually a couple of folks that I followed on social media, totally separate from each other, were talking about unschooling, and they unschooled their kids and had for a really long time. And I was completely unfamiliar with that term. So I looked it up and was learning more about it. And I was like, what is this insane thing that people are talking about unschooling? Like, I don't understand. But it started this educational process for myself, and about sort of these larger questions about what is the purpose of school, who decides what our children learn and when, and why is that the standard that we're using. And it was just sort of this jumping off point for a lot more conversations with myself, and then therefore with my husband, about, well, what do we want our children ultimately to learn, and how is that going to look for our family, type of a thing. And so that's what sort of planted the seed, was the pandemic and these folks that I follow on social media. And so as I started learning more about the fact that there were these different schools of thought, even within the homeschool community, and different approaches that families took, and these eclectic approaches, and the whole concept of secular homeschooling was a completely new thing to me as well. And so through all of those things, I was like, I think this is going to be a really good fit for our family, and just the way that we're living our life. I think this could fit in really well. And so that was sort of the initial starting point, I would say.
Being in kind of the rural West Tennessee, did that factor in as well? Is it difficult to access schools or even, just other communities and whatnot? Was that part of the decision as well?
A little bit for sure. We have the place that we live in is quite rural, and so there are just literally fewer schools. So a lot of the choices are just not there. There are lots of private schools. I'll say lots. There's a few private schools in our area, but they are all, very conservative Christian, and just sort of not the route that we wanted to go with for our kids. And the elementary school is perfectly fine. It's a fine school, but it's certainly not something that, we're like dying to take our kid to, type of a thing. And again, it was more I mean, I guess we could probably get into this parts of it later in the conversation as well. But the culture that we live in is just generally very conservative and very Christian. And so it's not just that the it's a public school, which technically is secular, but it's still not maybe the breadth or depth of education that we want for our children. And honestly, that was the big motivating factor for homeschooling was we talked with each other and honestly believed that we could provide our daughter, at least right now, all of our kids, with a greater depth of education than what was currently available to us.
Is part of it play for you? I know for us, with me working part-time remote, and definitely we started homeschooling just before the pandemic, but you know, really got into it then. There was a sense of like, because mom is working at home, dad is here, family's here. Like I almost just, we were already in homeschool, but I wouldn't have wanted to send our daughter away from that family unit. Is that part of it too? Just keeping you all together?
Yes, I think that we very much felt the same way that you guys did. And there's, I was working not remotely. And when I started working remotely, it just sort of solidified our decision to homeschool. And that was a big reason was, you know, I'm here 100% full time, as is my husband. So we have two adults who can really share a lot of the workload in lots of areas, including homeschooling, right? Or, you know, hey, the baby needs a diaper change. We're in the middle of something. Can you handle that? Yes. You know, that just those types of things, it really just fit very naturally into the life that we were already leading in our home. And homeschooling just fit right into that. And I think enhances it in a lot of ways.
Was it the experience of having a child in a diaper banging on a door, similar to the one you see over Ariel's shoulder, just staring at you like you're in a zoo? Was that really the tipping point?
It was for me. I was like, I want to be here for that baby.
That was a big moment. We have the pictures to prove it. You talked about doing all this research and like coming through the unschooling and all, obviously the myriad of ways of homeschooling out there. And you did your research. What was that moment? Like you said, okay, I think this is what we're going to do. You finally kind of pulled the trigger and said, okay, we're going to do this thing. What was that transition process, the research, and you know, how did you find what you wanted to do? What was that like for you?
Well, I knew that we wanted to use a secular curriculum. And so that honestly narrowed down the choices a lot. So it made the research actually a lot easier from my perspective, because there were just fewer choices, quite frankly, to look through. So that was good, honestly. And I think as I was researching and learning, one thing that I realized that really solidified in my mind that this was going to be a good fit for our family was I got really excited. Like I liked looking at the curriculums. I liked thinking about, okay, how would we incorporate that into our family life, into the education of our child? We both love to cook. So it's like, okay, how can we integrate food? Same. And that's like such an important part of culture. And that's just such a natural way to think about, to learn, I guess, about different cultures. Unlike you guys, we're actually big folklore and poetry fans.
Hey, so, it's there for somebody.
That's
exactly. And I'm glad you say that.
That's how I know she's listened to our stuff, is that she pointed out the one thing I do not like.
She just don't. But that's why I love that we have the options to be like, oh, that's not for us, but that's for you. And that's great. I love that ability to tailor.
Yes. And our daughter really likes that too. So we're using the Torchlight K curriculum, and they have the year full of stories as part of it's a spine. And she loves it. It's like one of her favorite books, and that's all folklore and stories. But I, you know, in looking at the book, it really is an interesting way to learn about different cultures because it's stories, you could see some common threads, but obviously there's some cultural differences too. And how do cultures look at different aspects of folk, you know, anyway, so all that to say, that piece of it is like a highlight for my daughter.
That's
she
awesome.
Gets excited That's about cool. reading those stories.
Did you notice too, I don't know if it's just me, but looking through curriculum, I'm thinking about like, ooh, I want to learn that. Did that occur to you too? Like, I don't remember learning about that.
Yes. Well, I'm especially interested in that for this next year. So we're going to switch from Torchlight to Build Your Library next year. And I am so excited to learn about all this ancient history that I sure did not learn in school. I could tell you some basic broad strokes, but certainly nothing like with any depth. And in watching y'all's videos and just looking through the curriculum, sort of prepping for next year, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna learn a lot as well with this 6-year-old.
That's what I felt about prehistory. I was like, I knew in my head, like, Big Bang, you know, fish crawled out of the ocean, man, and dinosaurs, right?
Like, dinosaurs are in there, right?
There was a lot that was, I realized once we started the prehistory, I'm like, wow, my public school education was lacking.
Yeah, it wasn't a focus and everything. So yeah, I absolutely agree with you that kind of the discovery mode almost, I think it almost makes a lot of us who are, you know, untrained educators, like some of the best educators, because we're so interested in what's going on. We can bring that energy to whatever the curriculum is. Maybe it's not the same teacher teaching first grade over and over and over again. And maybe after year 6 or 7, they're just, you know, locked in and they just go through the motions. We're like almost discovering it with them. It's kind of a fun thing.
I mean, that makes us untrained educators. And sometimes we make mistakes because of that.
How did
you feel about, you know, you've done the research, you've decided kind of what you want to use, what your family likes. How did you feel about that role of you and your husband becoming educators? Did you both feel the same way, or was there some hesitation?
There was, I would say, definitely some hesitation on his part at first, more because it's like, wait, I have to take care of these children and educate one of them at the same, like, how is this going to work? Which is a very valid question. I mean, you only have so much time and energy and sanity in the day to get through everything. So I completely understand that. Having another parent at home working was a huge, you know, advantage there for sure. But I think as he and I were talking about this, and again, this was one thing that was an advantage for us, was we were not taking a child out of school and then putting them in a homeschool environment. We were talking about starting in kindergarten. One thing that I found super reassuring was, I was like, well, it's kindergarten, like, not to besmirch kindergarten, but it's like, it felt like kind of a low stakes situation to me. And so what I kept coming back to was like, okay, if this is an absolute disaster for anyone involved, or if this is just not working, I feel very confident that we can send her to the perfectly fine first grade down the road, and we can figure something else out in the future if we need to. But obviously, but we have had just a lovely first year, and it's been great. It's really worked out well. My daughter loves the style of homeschool that we're doing. We love having her home. We love exposing her to all these new books and pieces of literature and different, you know, documentaries and things like that. So I would say it was a really successful first year, and we have no plans at all to change what we're doing for her or for our sons.
How was that, you know, those initial first few weeks or months for your husband when you gave him the big crate and he's got all the books and you opened up the curriculum because you did all the nice planning work?
He's looking at me.
Like, I know exactly what he went through. It was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing, or this is terrible. And, you know, if you think about it, you're just finishing up your first year. You had a 14-month-old. That's a baby. I was in the exact same situation. I had a 5-month-old on my chest. And I'm walking around the kitchen reading Torchlight, K stuff to my daughter. And I'm like, I don't know. This is wild. I mean, this is crazy. And I never thought I'd be here and everything. How did he handle that? How did he overcome that?
It was a learning curve for everyone involved, for me, for him, for our daughter too, right? This is something new that she's hasn't really had to do. She's never been daycare. So she's just used to playing and kind of doing her thing all day. And all of a sudden we're having to, you know, set aside a certain amount of time every day to do specific things. And she, you know, thankfully was very adaptable, as most kids are, and it was fine. But I think, like most probably new homeschool parents, it was sort of like, okay, we got to get all the things, we have to check all the boxes, we have to do this in the order that it says, we have to do it the first thing in the mornings so that it's done, you know. And obviously, as time goes on, you learn, okay, which activities can we probably skip? What can we substitute? What can we condense? What do we know we're going to need to spend a little more time on? The morning doesn't work for us today. Let's do it in the afternoon. No big deal. And all of that just sort of naturally, I think, happens because you just adapt. I mean, like with anything else, you just sort of learn what rhythms your family's going to need to do that week or that day. And you move on. And I think we're at a place now where when I prep for, because I'm in charge of prepping for the week for what they need for the next week. So printing out the worksheets and gathering the books and making sure you have the special supplies for the craft and all of that. And I know now what they're probably going to skip this week and what they are definitely going to need, you know, extras of or whatever. And so I even know better what to prep week to week.
I think that tag team approach is so good.
I was just going to say that having a little bit of help and listening to the, you know, the mothers listening to this, who the husbands are not helping you, play this audio to them. You guys need to help and do a little bit of book holds at the library while you're, you know, working at work and stuff, because mom's dealing with a bunch of kids and it is a challenge, right? It's not like I have three kids who are all in elementary age, right? So I'm doing curriculum with them and everything. It's dealing with those really, really youngins, like the 1 year, 2 year, 4 years old, and balancing that. That is really tough. I mean, that's the delta there. And I think that's where it really, really helps to have someone like yourself just helping along the way. I think it makes for a lot of success. And then, you know, in a year or two, when your son is four, now he's six, and now he's doing that thing, doing his thing, it becomes a lot easier and stuff, because now you're having more kids who are more in the regular traditional education, as opposed to, I'm just trying to entertain you and keep you from destroying the thing we're doing over here. You know?
Yes.
I think it's super helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, like, especially with the prepping, you know, it's like anything else. The more you do it, the easier it becomes. And so it probably literally takes me 10, maybe 15 minutes max over the weekend to actually get them prepped for what they need. And again, this is kindergarten, so there is, to be fair, not a ton of prep work per se that I need to do. But it really does just get easier over time as you learn your family and learn your child and what they're going to need. It really doesn't take that long.
I like to think of myself as a homeschool administrator.
You're a facilitator.
Right. We facilitate this homeschool.
For sure. And so, like, I research all the curriculums. We talked about it. Like, here's what I'm thinking. Sounds good. Great. I'll be in charge of buying all the books and looking, watching out for the sales. And I'll be in charge of doing stuff with the state, you know, making sure that all of our paperwork and stuff is good with our umbrella school. I'll be in charge of looking for the extracurriculars and figuring out what's going to work for us. So then you can just be in charge of, my husband can just be in charge of doing the actual teaching. That's sort of my goal with it. And I think that's
exactly what we do. It's literally
really helpful. Yeah. So you're using Torchlight K. What else are you, what else are you using for math and reading and things?
Yep. So we use Right Start Math for math. Love it. Oh my gosh. We love Right Start. All the manipulatives. I understand people's hesitation for buying all the manipulatives, but it is a really great program. And I think my daughter, I know she has learned way more math than I knew at five, almost 6 years old,
yes,
for sure.
Totally.
And has a much more solid foundation. As far as reading, so she was a very strong reader. And that's actually why we picked Torchlight, was because we knew she loves to read. She could read at a fairly early age. And so that was one of the reasons we went with the literature-based curriculum. And so really, I just have a bunch of books out there for her, some of which are in the curriculum, some of which are not. We do handwriting without tears as well, so for her handwriting, and some phonics. So that kind of dips in and out. We're not super consistent with the phonics. We use All About Spelling for that.
Mm-hmm.
But really, honestly, she's just a voracious reader. So we just make sure that she has books wherever she is, and she usually finds what she wants. And we go from there. So we're keeping it pretty basic again for kindergarten.
Yeah, but that's fantastic. I mean, to be able to have those options. How do you like the handwriting without tears? Mm-hmm. We haven't done a review on that before. You know, what's your experience with that?
We really like it. The book, I think, is laid out really well. You have the large Ticonderoga pencils, you know, the triangle ones.
The three-corner ones.
I know there's a term for them. And I think it works out really well. I think there's a set amount that they do each lesson or each time, and that seems to be a good amount for her. Mm-hmm. Or at least I haven't heard differently, I'll say that. So
being in the homeschool, being in a rural area, are there places that you can go to interact with other homeschoolers, or is that kind of limited?
It's obviously much more limited. Okay. And this is for kind of anyone in the homeschool world. So I was thinking about this in preparation for our conversation today, of there's sort of these overlapping challenges. One of them is just living in a rural area. There's fewer people. So there's fewer resources. There's fewer co-ops. There's fewer libraries. So we have one library, right, for the whole county, and it's tiny, and they have like nothing that we need. So if we want to get, some of the books that we need and we don't want to purchase them, we have to drive to another library that we pay extra to have a library card for, and it's 45 minutes away. So you kind of have to weigh like, okay, is the gas worth driving, or can I just buy this book and have it delivered to my door? Like those are things you have to consider. So there's fewer resources in that way. And then the added layer to that is being a secular homeschooling family. It is extremely challenging, I would say, because the co-ops that are here are all based through a church and have some type of religious education affiliated with them. And that's not to say that there's nothing there for us. For example, there's a local church that has a very robust like homeschool network, and they have lots of classes that they offer. And one of them is a art class with a woman who's been teaching for 30 plus years. And so we're going to start that in the fall. It's one day a week. They learn about art theory and all this stuff. And I mean, she's probably going to hear some church talk because it's at a church, but it's not the focus of the class. And so there are resources out there like that, but they are much fewer and far between for sure. But on the flip side, it's not weird to homeschool in a rural area. There's actually lots of folks that homeschool here. And most of them, at least the ones I've met, do it for religious reasons. So that is the difference. But it's not at all unusual for someone to come across a homeschooler. And there are, to be fair, other not specifically religious extracurriculars out there. So for example, Girl Scouts, right? Mm-hmm. We started a Girl Scout troop. I became the co-leader because
unite.
Right. So we started a Daisy troop a very small troop, but it's really sweet to be so small because we can really get to know the other girls. Same thing. There's active Boy Scout troops here. Even things like 4-H and FFA, Future Farmers of America, like all that stuff is very active out here. And those are not necessarily like religious institutions. Perfect. And then there's actually, believe it or not, a little gymnastics studio in our tiny town, and they have a homeschool class because there's so many homeschool kids here. So it's during the middle of the day, during the week, and it's gymnastics. So it's physical education and not really related per se to educational, like the curriculum, but still a way to meet people, to interact with other adults and other kids and do something hard for many weeks. And then you finally get the cartwheel and it's very exciting and all of that. So there are resources out here, but it's just fewer choices for sure.
You have to make more commitments to do things. Maybe that wouldn't be ideal, but to be able to, like what you said, like you form your own Girl Scout troop, you have to actually go out and do the thing and make the thing that you might need.
I think it's important though, what you're saying about, you know, there are these different homeschool classes and things, and sure, the majority or everyone but you maybe is a religious based homeschooler, but that doesn't, like, to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? At our current partnership, we probably are 75% religious homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. There's definitely some of us secular folks, but our daughter has friends that are religious homeschoolers. I've talked with religious homeschool moms. And, you know, I think the idea that we can't find some community even across lines, you know, that would isolate us. So
for sure.
You know, I mean, yeah, certainly we're not going to go into some topics, but that doesn't mean our kids couldn't be friends or that taking a class together, a gymnastics class, isn't like the right answer.
Exactly. And I mean, we live in the South. Like I'm Southern, my husband's Southern. Like this is the water we're swimming in. Like this is not news. Most people's social lives and friendships and social circles and all of that revolve around church. Like that is the social linchpin for most people. And obviously, if you go into more urban areas or like cities, that's not going to be the norm everywhere. But it certainly is here in the rural areas, and even within cities, that's pretty normal. So it honestly is like part of the culture. And so I think to completely divorce yourself from anything religious, you would just never go anywhere then if you were here, because that's kind of what most people do. And there are things to be found. You do just have to dig a little bit deeper, and you may have to be, like we've already said, you may have to be the person that starts the Girl Scout troop or starts the playground, you know, play group once a month or whatever it is. You do maybe have to step up and be that leader.
And you might find the more things that you do with these different groups that you're going to find some very quiet secular homeschoolers out there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm sure.
They're there.
So we talked about kind of your experience so far. What were some of the preconceived notions that you maybe had before? You alluded to it earlier that you had some thoughts of homeschool before, but now that now you've been doing it, you know, what were those things and maybe how has that changed over time?
So I knew several kids who were homeschooled growing up, and without exception, I'm pretty sure, they were all kids who were homeschooled for religious reasons, because their parents felt that the public school system or even the private schools that were available were too worldly and secular. And I grew up in that world a little bit too, that I will not go through my spiritual journey with you guys. It's kind of out of the scope of the podcast. But I went, everyone that I knew that was homeschooled, it was because their family was very conservative and it was for religious reasons. And I didn't really have super strong opinions about those kids. Some of them were kind of seemed like weird and awkward and naive to me, but also I was a teenager. So maybe it was just me being a teenager thinking that about them. But that was my experience with homeschooling. I didn't really know any other way. There, I'm sure there were people in my community that were homeschooling for non-religious reasons. I just didn't know any. And then as I started learning, again, the past few years, starting really in the pandemic, with that there are people that homeschool for lots of reasons, and that certainly went up, it seems like, exponentially with the with the pandemic, when people were trying to do school from home with their kids and trying to navigate all of that. And what I was finding was, sort of in contrast, the kids that I knew growing up who were homeschooled for these conservative or religious reasons, their parents were really, in my opinion, trying to restrict what they were learning and what they were exposed to. And the reason that I wanted to homeschool, and why I found a lot of other people wanted to homeschool, is we want to actually expand, right, what our children are exposed to, or we want to give them the opportunities to really allow their individual talents and abilities flourish, or to really have time to discover what their passions are and have time to actually cultivate those. And that is a totally valid reason to homeschool as well. And one that I think more and more people are doing now. And certainly that's why we did it.
Absolutely. So let's walk us through it. You have three children. What is your husband? What do you and your husband do on a daily basis to homeschool? What's like an average day?
I love average. We're going to put in air quotes that the people in the audience can't see.
I have 7 days, and I have probably like six different days.
Right.
And they're not consistent week to week.
They're not consistent week to week. So
understood. So average day. All the kids wake up usually around 7 or 7:30, and I'm the one that gets up with them. So husband sleeps in, and I get them up with dressing them, getting ready for their day. I get them breakfast, get them all settled. And then around 8:15, 8:20, we switch. So I start getting ready for work. I sit down around 8:30 at my desk, get that last cup of coffee going before I start work. And he takes over with the kids. He might do a little bit of sort of last minute prep for homeschool while they're finishing breakfast. And then they usually get started around 9 or 9:30 with homeschool. Mm-hmm. And right now, the way it's working is it's sort of wherever the homeschooling, I guess, the teaching, the education happens wherever my daughter wants to. So right now it's in the guest room. So they're all in the guest room right now, but it's moved from the den into other parts of the house. And so while she and my husband are doing their homeschooling thing, my son, who's four, he's really into these phonics flashcards. And so he's been doing these little phonics flashcards, and he'll also listen in on some of the education or the learning going on. And sometimes he's also really loud and annoying and being very distracting. So then he has to go play somewhere else, which he will. And then the baby, poor baby, he is just in his playpen, chilling in the same room with my husband usually. And he's just sort of doing his thing. He's also the chillest baby on the planet. So that helps a ton. It's probably a little bit of nurture, I guess that would be, because he's the third and he just kind of goes along with whatever we're doing. So anyway, so that's usually finishes up around lunchtime. So between, you know, all the different pieces of the curriculum and anything they need to catch up on or any review they need to do with math or whatever, all that usually happens around lunchtime. We, depending on my meeting schedule, may or may not all eat lunch together as a family, which is super lovely. And then the afternoon is usually for running errands or playing, or if there's a part of a book they didn't finish in the morning, they finish that up. And cleaning up their room, that type of stuff that needs to happen. And then I usually wrap up work around 5. And then after that, it's getting ready for supper and bath mm-hmm. and bedtime, and they're in bed by 7:30 usually. So
that's amazing. I mean, that's great.
I think it's great. And I love how like low stress that is. It's like, hey, you're getting them ready. You'll switch off. Your husband's going to do homeschool for a few hours. Hopefully you can all eat lunch together. I love having breakfast with my girls. And the days that I do work remotely, it's like, oh, it's lunchtime, girls. You know, I just love it. It gives me so much joy to be there with them and for them to be together.
Yep.
Everything is so, in general, at least right now, not every moment is bliss, I would say, but it's certainly way less stressful than it used to be. Because again, I work from home. Like to get ready for work is the time it takes for me to like change out of my pajamas and like maybe rake my fingers through my hair and it's done. You know what I mean? Like there's no commute, right? There's no like, oh, I got to go get gas because I forgot to last night. It's like none of that is going on. And so I literally can just walk in with my coffee and sit down at my office chair a few minutes before I need to start work. And that is my commute. Like that's it. And so because there's just so much time that is not spent doing all these other things related to working offsite or away from my home, I guess, there's just a lot more room to do those other things, like have breakfast with them, or I mean, honestly, give my husband a little bit extra time to sleep so that he can be fully ready for taking care of three kids. Like all of that is just very helpful and something that we have intentionally tried to cultivate right now.
Are you seeing kind of a shift here coming up now that your son is doing some phonics work? He's four. You're thinking about kindergarten. What is your plan to carry those two and then ultimately bring the youngest in? The youngest got a little bit more of a separation, but are you going to link those two together? They're going to ride together. What are your thoughts there?
Right. So my son just turned four. So he will be, he has one more year before we would start kindergarten with him. So we have a little time. I'm actually super curious to see, what we'll end up doing for him, because he's very different from my daughter. He's very active, but he's not outdoorsy. Because one thing I've noticed with a lot of the sort of more like kinesthetic learners, like active learners, is a lot of them tend to be outdoor stuff or nature stuff or nature studies. And he's just not that way. He goes outside for 10 minutes and he wants to come in. So it's this kind of little odd combination. So actually right now for him, it's sort of a question mark. Like our plan right now is to just repeat Torchlight K with him because we have all the supplies and it's a perfectly lovely curriculum with lots of great things to learn. So we're just going to keep all of that. And that's the plan for him right now. But I would be very interested, or I will be interested to see when it's actually time to start kindergarten with him, if there's anything we modify or just change completely, just because he's such a different learner than our daughter is. So to be seen. And then the baby, who knows? I don't know.
We really found that our four-year-old, she's closer to five. She's got a few months to go. Yeah. But she really changed a lot in that four-year-old year. I mean, they do change a lot at this age anyway. I feel like that's kind of silly to say. But as far as like, she was utter chaos at the beginning of four. And we were like, I don't know how we're going to homeschool these guys together. And now she's...
That year three to early four was like, ooh.
But she really, throughout her, you know, four-year-old year, she's definitely gotten much more into like listening to the books be read, coloring, doing craft projects. And
you can tell she's listening to what we're reading.
Yeah, she's much more engaged, and we've done a little bit of curriculum with her, and she's just like really excelling at it and really loving it. But I had my doubts. So
questions.
It might be a big transition year for him.
Yeah.
Well, that's great to hear. And I am curious to see how he evolves and changes over time. And then he and my daughter are a little less than 2 years apart. So they're actually pretty close in age, and they play great together, and they do have a lot of common interests. So there is a lot of overlap there. I will be curious to see, though, if the differences between them and their personalities and learning styles are enough to change completely what we do for his kindergarten year, or just sort of supplement with some extra stuff that he might like better with Torchlight.
And
we'll see.
And we're making this great merge back in. So our older daughter's now done, finished Ancient Civ, and we're about to start this summer the Around the World again. And then we're going to bring our older one back into Around the World and have her do it again, but at a little bit more of an elevated level. And that's going to be kind of an interesting thing. But from my standpoint, it's really just like, I don't want to have to do two separate curriculums.
Yeah, it's 100%. We got a couple of months to finish Ancient Civs, and then we're going to see how this jive goes. But I'm hoping that the world study has got enough, like there's music, there's food, there's enough other things that I'm hoping that you know, we can, and there's enough crafts and that
Right.
Howl Like a Wolf book, I'm sure that he will love.
Yes, that's right up his alley. Right up his alley, yes.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that there'll be enough goodness there to kind of capture, because our daughters definitely do have different learning styles too.
They very much do.
So I think it's a challenge, but you know, like you say, trying to keep two curriculums afloat at the same time. You're already going to be doing two separate math curriculums and at least one reading curriculum if your daughter's not doing, but you're doing spelling with her. So you've got enough different things that I think it could be a challenge.
Absolutely. Now, is there something in the homeschool that you guys can't live without, like crates or
Matt always
subscription?
He always like has Amazon open. He's like, what is it you can't live without?
teach me.
Right. Well, I think there are lots of probably overlapping common things that we like. So we have the small whiteboards are invaluable, right? For math, for spelling, for just jotting down some notes. My husband has, I'm totally blanking on the name. It's the big Kindle that you can write on with a stylus. I can't remember what it's called.
It's the Remarkable.
Okay.
I'll put a link in the, I'll put a link in the show notes. I think I know what you're talking about. It's the e-ink screen, but you can handwrite on it. I think it's called the Remarkable.
He loves that. So when we were looking at the different curriculum choices, I wanted a printed paper copy so I could make notes and cross stuff out. And he likes to actually look at the PDF. And so he puts the PDF on his Kindle and he can make notes on the stylus or cross it out or whatever of what they actually did. And then you can use the blank page with a stylus for math stuff or for drawing or for making just little notes of what worked that week or what didn't or whatever. Then when I go back and actually catalog or record what they did, because I'm also paranoid, I have a paper copy of what they actually learned every day in case the computer suddenly crashes or whatever. I can go back and look at those notes that he's made in the Kindle to see what they've done. So he uses that a lot.
Okay.
And other than that, we have approximately 500 RASCOGs, those wheeling carts from IKEA. Do you know what those are? I'm sure you've seen them because they're in every IKEA, but they're basically like a three-tiered cart with wheels, and you can adjust the height of the shelves within the cart.
And they have drawers, right?
No, it's just like an open. I'll send you a picture later.
Okay.
Or a link to them. But they're very popular. But they're basically like these open. They're not drawers. They're like open crates, I guess. And there's three levels of them, and they're on wheels, so you wheel them around. And so we throw all the stuff in there. Or if there's certain books that we need, I'll need them later.
Is it like a utility cart, and there's like bins, and you take the bins at different levels?
I got you. Okay.
A lot of people use them also for really anything, like for bottles for your bar, that can be like, it's like, because they wheel around.
I'm seeing them. We're already starting to brainstorm. Like, that's a really good idea.
We'll put a link in the show notes for folks who want to go to IKEA. But yeah, that's really... yes. That's really neat. I like that.
Yeah, that's a cool way to go. Now, a little bit earlier, maybe we'll go off topic. We have people at home don't know. We work from questions. We were professionals here. you had mentioned you had an umbrella school that you had to work with. What is Tennessee's rules and issues, and what do you have to do to report and whatnot? What's your story on that?
Okay. So Tennessee is, for better or worse, a very, very homeschool friendly state. There is very little you have to do in the state of Tennessee to homeschool from a legal / state requirement perspective. So there's really three routes you can go. The first is they have a long list of online accredited schools, and that's literally sitting in front of a computer and doing online classes. And there's a list of them, and you can pick and do that. I don't know how you do that with a kindergartner, but in theory, you could do something like that. So that's one option. I think it's more, to be fair, for kids who are maybe high school, or they just need to finish 1 year and they just knock it out and it's accredited and that's it. So that's one option. The second option is truly independent homeschooling, where you are just doing your own thing on your own. You file paperwork with the superintendent, so whatever school district your child is supposed to go to for public schooling, you file paperwork with them every year, and then you're required to take standardized tests at certain grades. I'm blanking on which ones, but I think it's like third, fifth, and seventh and ninth, maybe, for the typical standardized tests. And then there's a third option, which is what the vast majority of people do, which is what we do, which is called the umbrella school. And basically, these are programs within the state, and you are sort of enrolled under them as a student, and they set their own requirements about things like standardized testing or what curriculum you use or anything like that. And vast majority of them, as you can imagine, don't require testing. That's a big appeal for folks that want to, or that don't want to go that route with their kids. And then some of them will even go so far as to like supply you with curriculum if you want to, all the way down to what we do, which is where they don't care what your curriculum is. And then other than that, you have to have 180 days of attendance for 365 days. And you as the parent get to determine what education looks like for a day, so that they don't really have you doing a certain amount of certain curricula requirements.
Or a number of hours. There's no hours requirement or anything.
There are hours. Okay. I think wink, it's wink. 4 hours a day, gotcha. If I recall. But again, you get to determine what the education looks like in those mm-hmm. 4 hours. It does not have to be like formal curriculum. And then the only exception is for high school, you do have to have a certain number of credits of English and math and all of that to get a diploma. That mm-hmm. is the only thing that's really sort of a more hard and fast rule, I guess. And so the way it works
could those classes be things that are taught at home, or do you have to actually go get formal classes?
No, they absolutely can be things taught at home. They absolutely can be things taught at home. You just have to document that you did it. But the way you document it is not through like standardized testing or anything like that. It's just the parents said they did it. And so the way it works with us is we're enrolled in a very like hands-off umbrella school. That's the word I'm looking for. And I document with them like our attendance, and they just make sure it adds up to 180. And for K through eighth, you don't even really have to give grades. It's just sort of however you want to do it. They'll even take, I can't remember what it's called, like descriptive grades. Like you can describe how your child did that year, that semester. And that's like good enough until high school, in which case you do need to get, like I said, a certain number of credits with, I think they do have to have some type of grading system. So that's a long way off for us, but it's very lax. And again, there's definitely benefits to that. And there are definitely drawbacks to that. There are certainly kids, it's sad to say, but there are certainly kids that I would say are undergoing like something like educational neglect, where I know that they're not being taught what we would consider probably pretty basic things. Most parents are out there wanting to do the best for their kids. They want to educate them. They want them to have a robust education. But because the way the laws are, like they are pretty lax.
Are there any ways that you can get money through this program to purchase curriculum? Does your state allow that? No. Okay. I know. There's about eight or nine of them now that are cutting some small checks for people to be able to buy curriculum, and I think the mandate is it's secular curriculum, but I'd love to pay for my Right Start Math curriculum or my All About Reading curriculum through some dollars, but I didn't know if you guys had that.
We don't. So there's nothing like that in Tennessee. Every once in a while in the Facebook groups, folks will ask like, does anyone, I heard they do this in Arizona or wherever, and everyone's like, nope, sorry, they don't do that here. Tennessee does not have state income tax, and so there's a lot of things like that that we just don't have. Like even as I was referencing earlier, our library system, like our libraries are tiny and they're all like these individual systems, so even like interlibrary loans don't really work with all the libraries because they're different systems. And so there's just a lot of that connective tissue that I think sometimes happens with states that just have like more robust like avenues of revenue, I guess. We don't have them here. Okay.
And do you find yourself having to purchase your books for the curriculum? Because a lot of these digital curriculums require almost a close relationship with the library to end up get a lot of these books. Otherwise we joked about it, I think a couple of years ago, like if you actually had to buy all the books for like Torchlight Around the World or something like that, you're going to spend $1,000, maybe $1,200 bucks on your books.
I mean, you bought them all new.
All new. Right. Yeah.
Yes. And that was a big thing that I looked at when we were looking at Torchlight. It was like, okay, realistically, I do not have access to 95% of these books through my local library. Like I just don't. So these books are going to have to come from somewhere. So I have a spreadsheet of what the price is on Amazon new, so that if I came across a used book, I could tell pretty quickly if it was actually a good deal or not. And then, like I mentioned, there's a larger town that we do pay to have a library card through them. I think it's like $50 a year. So it's not nothing, but it's certainly not super expensive. And they have a much, much, much wider selection. But again, they're 45 minutes away, right? So we have to think about the time, the gas money to get there. Like, is it worth that money for the book? Sometimes it is. Many times it's not. What I have found the most helpful, honestly, is the online used book avenue or book route for in a couple ways. I love thrift books. I have found the most success with them. And I have different wish lists. So I'll tag the different books that I know I'm going to need, and it can send you alerts either weekly or instantly if one's available. And also through thrift books, if you're a homeschool educator, you can sign up for the teacher discounts, which is what I do. And so I think it's every fifth book that you buy through them, you get for free if it's $7 or less. And so for a lot of these books, for the children's books especially, it's actually pretty easy to find a used book through them that's $7 or less. So I try to time it out that way. And then you earn extra points if you're with the teacher program or whatever. So just to plug out there to homeschool parents that you do count for those types of discounts, at least at thrift books. And then the other place is, of course, the buy, sell, trade pages on Facebook. I find a lot of success with parents that are just trying to get rid of these darn books, and they'll sell you a bundle for really cheap. And if you know what you're looking for, you can usually find some good deals. For example, I've been trying to prep get all the books for next year for Build Your Library level one. And A Child Through Time, I think it's out of print or something because it is so expensive on Amazon. It's like $30. And it's like, or maybe like 26. It's expensive. And so and it's not on thrift books very often. And if it is, it's like just a couple dollars less than the new one. So I kept looking for it, and finally, on one of the Facebook pages, someone was selling it with a bundle, so I snagged it.
That's good.
Some of those big books are like, I know they put a lot of effort into it. I know the work that goes into making it, and so I understand the price behind it. But it's like, you're only going to read it for 2 minutes, mm-hmm. 10 times, and you're just like, I'm spending a dollar every time I open this book, and it's hard to justify the price on that.
Although that book we've actually read through in its entirety, and then we're going through it again in Ancients. I think it has a long shelf life.
It does.
I love Book Finder because it can look across all the sites.
Yes, that's Book another great one. That's another great one. And between the online book outlets and thrift books and Book Finder and the Facebook groups, I've been able to find the vast majority of the books that we need. And they are definitely cheaper than it would be to purchase brand new or even gently used.
Yeah, I don't know how much it would be all. I don't think it'd be 1,000. It wouldn't be that much. But
well, if you
had to buy a couple levels, it
could be pretty expensive. Now, I have a question regarding like how far out you plan. Like, you're talking about having all this stuff and you have spreadsheets and everything. Our hearts went bubble, bubble, bubble. You said spreadsheets.
I love a good spreadsheet.
And
me too.
So how far out are you thinking? Like, are you a year, 2 years out? Like, what are you thinking?
Well, right now it's just a year because we are switching from Torchlight to Build Your Library. So I want to see how Build Your Library goes. I'll probably give it a few months, maybe half the year, and see if she likes it. And then if she does, I think we'll probably continue with Build Your Library, which was another reason I was so excited to find y'all's channel, because when I was researching, like, do we want to do Torchlight? And then you guys have this whole series of videos on all the different countries. I was like, oh my gosh. So and then I saw you guys were using Build Your Library year one, and you're doing these great reviews on your YouTube channel now. So if you could just keep choosing the curriculum that I want and do it in your head of us, that would be so helpful.
Well, I highly recommend prehistory, like do with Build Your Library or do Blossom and Root or whatever. But like doing the prehistory was like a really good deviation.
Leading right up to the start of Ancients, because the start of Ancients starts with that Neolithic, Paleolithic time period. And if you do the prehistory, you come right up against that. And so it kind of is a nice flow. I know science is really hard for a lot of homeschoolers, especially early, and finding science that works. And we enjoyed it because it was almost like history with science, and we just like devoted ourselves to science for, you know, it was almost like 4 months, and it was really nice. It felt good.
We did a combo of Blossom and Root and Build Your Library, which, you know, the Blossom and Root's a third grade curriculum, so we had to kind of like level that down, which was a little hard. But the Build Your Library 6-week prehistory would be very accessible. I think, for first grader. And it's mostly about, I mean, it goes through a little bit of dinosaur stuff, and you could, you know, add a little more dinosaurs if you want to. But it does a really good job with early man and good books. So it, and it's supposed to be 6 weeks, I think.
6 or 7 weeks, yeah.
So
yeah.
that's a really good one to do.
Well, one thing I'm really excited about is next year with Build Your Library, they have those One Small Square books, the Woods, Pond, and Backyard,
really
I think.
Really good books.
And I'm so excited for those, because one advantage of living in a rural area is we have a pond and woods on our property. And so we're actually going to be able to do those things like in our yard, to really like do a deep dive into those nature books, and the, you know, world around us type of nature.
Yeah,
study.
Those are
and
great books,
especially if you have those resources right in the backyard. It's it's perfect. It's just spot on. Even like within walking distance, if you had something like that. We don't have a pond, but there's a pond with about 15-minute walk from here, so you can go sit on the edge and look at things. So it's this very awesome. Same. I think you're gonna love it. You're gonna love those.
Yeah, it's really good. So we'll try to keep ahead of you. I don't know. We're going back around the world. So.
But I think we're going to do a shorter stint of it. Like we did the combo last time, and we're fine with the combo, but I don't know if I want to do the combo again. So
I don't know how y'all did that. I remember, because didn't you do 2 weeks for each country? That's intense.
Yeah.
That's intense.
It was over
there were some places that didn't have a lot of material.
It was
a
region. And it was like Eastern Europe.
So it was a little hard. So we're going to actually, we're going to just go back and kind of choose a greatest hits for our, you know, places we loved most, and just do 2 weeks a piece, because I really feel like the 2 weeks was great because you really got to like be in it. We got time to cook and do different stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, going everywhere was like, it ended up being a lot of
weeks. It was a lot of weeks. No, so there's parents out there and you're fresh off of it. We're two seasoned. We have big homeschool problems because we're older, but you're fresh off of it in your first year. Tell us, you know, there's a parent out there who's thinking about this, who might be listening to this podcast. They just found it and they listened to your interview. You know, give them some words of wisdom. Should they do it? Should they not?
My word of wisdom would be to be optimistically realistic about your homeschool.
I like that.
Planning. That's very well said. Because I think a lot of people appropriately have concerns. Do I have enough time? Do I have enough energy? Do I have enough money to homeschool? It does take all of those things. And for some people, homeschool is not going to be the right fit for them, and that is okay. But most people out there can do it, and they can do it well. And so I think my advice for first year or homeschoolers or people who think that they may want to homeschool is just to be realistic, but also give yourself a little, you know, have faith in yourself that you can do it, and because you probably can. And the other piece I would say is that if homeschooling ends up not working out for you, just being a complete disaster, it is not a failure if your children have to go to a traditional school setting. And to think outside the box about, even if they go to that traditional home or that traditional schooling setting, what are other ways at home that you can still get a piece of that homeschool experience? Is there a special interest that they have that they're not getting enough exposure to at school? You can do that at home. Is there some piece that you can supplement at home with the cooking or the documentaries or the filmmaking or whatever their interests are that can still act as that supplement and enriching opportunity that they need? It doesn't have to look like every other homeschooler. And I think that's the beauty of homeschool, is literally every family can decide what's going to work for them in that year or that season or even that week, what's going to work for them. And at the end of the day, like that's what it's all about, is just making sure that our kids have the opportunities they need with the resources that we're able to give them at that time. And that's all you can do, I guess, as a parent.
I love it. That's great advice.
It's a great note to leave it on.
Gina, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a wonderful conversation. I always love hearing new people start, and gets me reinvigorated doing my own work. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And I really, really love all of your resources, your YouTube channel, your podcast. I'm a loyal listener, and all of the amazing resources that you have provided all of us in the homeschool community. I really appreciate it. It's been instrumental, honestly, in helping us plan this past year.
So glad.
Kind words. Thank you very much.
We'll keep going. Thanks so much for joining us today and making us a part of your homeschool journey. Please engage with us on social media. Join our Homeschool Together podcast group on Facebook and find us at Homeschool Together Podcast on Instagram. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions, and recommendations. Until next time,
happy homeschooling!